Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Inside information on your teams, honest opinion, and the biggest names in sports. It's time, Las Vegas, for the Playmakers.
And it is a bright and shiny Monday, like a diamond, right? Paul Lyhander and Lindsey Brown with you.
Hello, hello. Greetings, shine bright like a diamond. Paul, how are you today?
I'm all right. Lindsey's back from a little restification and on a Monday. Yeah, everybody needs a breather, just like the wind out there, which continues to pick, which is weird. Like, I want to actually go find a kite. I want a kite, and I can't. Yeah, I want a kite. I do.
Yeah, paragliding everywhere has just been completely grounded, Paul. It's unbelievable. I've never seen winds, at least not where it's just like an isolated incident where it's like one day it gets really windy in Minnesota. This has been for, you know, these are gusts, actual, you know, things. Like, it's crazy. I'm here for it, though. I'm here for it.
Yeah, the truth. It's as we wind our way through the month of March, we're midway through, and or May. See, look at that. I'm already thrown off.
Oh, my God.
it's been that kind of a long,
challenging
weekend. Man, I could use some more coffee. I don't know.
Honestly,
I don't know.
Can we get an IV or something?
No. I've had those, and I do not like the feeling of an IV being shoved into my skin. Nobody likes that.
They're not ideal. But sometimes they're better than not getting them, you know, shoved into your skin.
Right. Here's how crazy it is right now. Let me tell you that there are here, it's like 85 outside, right? You know, there are some places that are still under like winter weather advisories in the middle of May.
Yeah, and that's just, Minnesota had snow like a week ago, Paul.
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense.
It's just
that's why we're lucky.
Yeah.
It is weird.
I suppose it's luck. I got out this weekend and stretched out a little bit and did the normal things that I do on the weekends, which is basically shop for essentials and then go back home and support a couple of local businesses on the way. I think I spent about – what did I spend? Before tip, I think I spent about $80 on
– on a meal food, just for the fan, for your entire
family. I had two meals. I had two meals. And ended up walking into a place last night, a barbecue place, and – spent about $35 and added some
great
on the end to make it $40. Yeah. And then made a phone call and said, let's order some more food because it was so quiet. There were like three people in there. And there were like seven people working. And then I was like, we'll just order some more food. So I bought like another $12 worth of food because I did. And the owner's there.
Why not?
His name is Brian's there. And I was like, and I'm there every 2 weeks. I go every 2 weeks because he's been open. And I go, dude, I just bought some extra food. And he goes, I appreciate you, man. And I'm like,
That's super nice of you.
It's tough out there, folks. So, you know, I got a
lot
of...
Did you eat all of it? Was it all finished, or are there leftovers involved?
We always have leftovers. When we go in there and get barbecue, we always get, like, turkey and brisket, their mac and cheese. It's Big B's. If you've never been to Big B's, you should go.
I haven't been there yet. I'll have to go.
They've got two. Matter of fact, our friends at Sam and Ash were giving away a gift card there.
my Lanta.
That expired today at 3. It's just kind of weird how that worked out, because I've never mentioned that to them, that particular place.
Right. But we always know it's good then, though, Paul, because they share it and you share it.
Yeah, we always order extra, so we always have extra at the end, just a little bit. So we usually put, like, a pot of chili together or whatever and have, like, a Texas chili with, like, brisket and turkey and whatever leftovers there are in there. So.
Oh, wow. That's next level thinking right there. That's versatility.
always, we always order extra. So, you know, listen, you know, as places begin, as places continue to open up here, it's been, you know, a week since a lot of folks were able to kind of open up the dining rooms. And we're seeing, you know, unfortunately, a few places not opening yet and a few places having to shut down. You know, the ones that are open, they do need your help, you know, and it's okay to spend a few extra bucks, you know, on some food. And I know for some of you, it's a little challenging and things are all tight. But, you know, for you, it's just as tight and it's tight for them, too. So if you have the means, you know, help them out a little bit. And, you know, like I said, there were seven people working there. There were three of us in the entire store. And I was like, you know,
yeah.
Like, it wasn't a guilt kind of thing. I was just like, man, I really want them to stick around. I got another buddy of mine. I know we get to the check down here, but, you know, we're just having a combo. And yeah. I got another buddy of mine who runs a pizza place in Oregon. He runs, and it's one, and he works every day. Like, he's been – I've known him for 30-plus years. And as soon as we both got out of school together, he bought this pizza place, bought the building and everything. And
wow.
He lives in a small – he lives in a rural area, a small town. And,
sure.
You know, he's in there, you know, 7 days a week now. He used to actually take Saturdays off. He would work Sundays and he would take Saturdays off, but he would always work the Friday night and stuff. And now he works every day. I was talking to my mom. She went in there and ordered pizza from him last weekend. And she's like, oh, yeah, Mark was back there making pizza. Didn't even have a chance to say hi. He's like, you know, you just, you know, doing what he had to do. And I was like, all right. You
yeah.
Know? But I told my mom, like, hey, thank you for supporting my buddy because you know him and it's a small town.
That's probably the MO for a lot of small businesses that have unfortunately had to obviously furlough or lay off or let people go in general, where, you know, if you're the owner, if this is your small business, that means you're on the clock. You're going to have to make sure to help mitigate all the losses and the pitfalls to try to navigate through this. And so that has to be a tough thing for him to do. And obviously we're all dealing with some pretty crazy circumstances, so it's a lot of stress. But like you said, Paul, we got to stimulate the local economy as much as we can, especially here in Las Vegas. So I'm glad that you took it upon yourself to add a little extra on top of yours. And I'll be sure to do the same when I order out.
And for those of you, you know, not looking for kudos or anything like that. It's just kind of what you do is just humans. We're trying to help each other out.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's for a lot of small business owners. And I know we're going to get to sports here. For a lot of small business owners, the reason when you walk in that door, and for those of you who are hesitant to walk out that door and put the mask on or whatever it is that you need to go to make yourself feel comfortable, and a matter of fact, you know, it's about your comfort, no matter what it is, it's about your comfort. But when you walk into these places, they light up, I promise you, because it is their whole reason. For a small business owner, it is their whole reason for getting up that morning is to serve you. They want to see you. They want to see your smiling face. Well, it's behind a mask. You know what I mean. They want to walk.
Right.
They want you to walk through that door because that is their whole purpose in life, is to get up. They have dreamt their entire lives, or maybe they reinvented themselves late in their life or whatever it is, midlife, career, whatever it is, to open up this business. And, you know, of all the people that don't want it to fail, they are number one. They are 100%. Number one at that point. And so you know, it chokes me up a little bit because I know a lot of folks that, you know, have run small businesses. I've run one before, you know, well before, you know, this whole radio thing and whatnot. And it is a beast. It is a beast every day. You get up with it. You go home with it. You go to bed with it. It's all the time.
Right.
But, you know, again, when they see you walk through that door, and again, you know, I hope people get more comfortable and you know, we're able to push through this and push through the comfort needs that we all need to have, you know, to make sure that we can get back out there again. But man, just know that they appreciate it.
It's the
when
next
you walk
way
through
to
door.
Help. It's the next way to help. We've been helping people as best we can, depending on what's been allowed, what's needed, what we know for information. But like there's a lot of big noise out there, Paul. So at least if you feel overwhelmed, which is a big reason why I took Friday off, because I've been feeling that way, you do the little things. You do the little things that you can help, that you can control, and you can control, you know, adding a little extra to your menu. Or like I don't eat that much, so this is a good opportunity for me to try stuff and then help them by giving them some extra cash. But this is just that next revolution of the new change and getting back to normal, and I'm glad that that there's some traction.
And the phone call helps, too. I mean, the phone rings, too. That helps.
100%.
They like, trust me, human contact is a wonderful thing. All right, let's get you to the five biggest stories of the afternoon.
It's your daily checkdown, powered by Radio.com Sports. Number one.
Okay, sports. The odds are right now we can just squash this noise, like just take a big boot and find the biggest scorpion that you are afraid of and just take the heel and just press on it really hard. Let's squash the rumor right now, at least for the most part, that the Rams and the Chargers and the 49ers are going to have to share the new building, the Allegiant Stadium, mm-hmm. with the Raiders. It was weird when this first came out. It didn't seem out of the ordinary that there were talks and whatnot, and there's all these what-ifs, but the governor in California today, also the governor in Texas and New York, also basically saying that professional sports could resume in their states by the end of this month, saying the first week of June, May 31st. That's in Texas. Same way with California and New York. They are paving the way right now to resume sports in their states. However, without fans, they're saying, hey, sorry, can't have people in the...
That's the way it's going to be, guys.
Right. But professional sports could return, and they might be able to control these places. You know, we're in Los Angeles. They're literally now telling people we have so many tests that we can offer people tests for free, and you can get tested again and again and again if you need
to. Sure.
So, you know, that it feels like there's some momentum here. I'm happy to see it.
Absolutely. We're in one next level of the fog, or at least pulling through some of the clouds, and it's obviously great to hear states like New York, like California, that have been hit so hard. And if they're comfortable saying this and putting this out into the news and saying, hey, we're going to be able to have this back in some capacity, that bodes well, obviously, for those areas that have been hit so hard. But just the overall narrative and just feeling that we're coming up. We're coming up for air a little bit here, so it's good to see.
Yeah.
Tink.
The crack of the bat, I guess. That would be a college baseball thing. All right, moving on.
Yes.
Number two.
All right, so when we put the rundown together here, the check down here, that the BYU AD over the weekend saying that he is going to say, we're going to play fall sports. We're going to have a fall sports season. I don't know when we're going to play. When we do, it's going to be beautiful. I know. The BYU AD, along with the Utah AD, both suggesting that we will have a fall sports season. And within the last hour, Notre Dame says it's going to have students on campus this fall, starting in August.
Interesting. I mean, we're going to see more and more of these schools kind of stepping forward and stuff. And it'll be interesting to see how, especially like this, was it last week that the Cal school said that they weren't going to have in-person instruction this fall, right, Paul?
Correct, yes.
Do you think that as more states kind of go through these, or, and granted, it's different in every single area, but maybe that might have been a little bit, you know, ahead of ourselves. But some areas I think are going to be able to go full blown, but some might not be able to. But it's going to be a weird college year. It's just weird.
Yeah, it'll be strange for a lot of folks just because of, you know, what needs to be done. Even if they try to keep social distancing in place, that there will be certain classes. Listen, when I was in school, I had lab classes where there were like six of us. You know, and the minimum to have the class was like two. You know, so some classes will be able to go on as scheduled in a building, in a laboratory or whatever, you know, especially if you're like a chemist and things like that. If you're a chemist, by the way, you're a chemical engineer, you need to be in a lab. You can't fake that by any means.
If you're a freshman, sophomore year and you're getting your generals, though, or like when I was at Ohio State for a year, when you walk into one class, you're like, oh, there's 800 people in here. That's not going to work. That's
correct. Yeah. No, probably not. When they know you by your last four of your social security number and your proper first name, probably not. But in some places, it will work, and it will. We'll see how this ball rolls down the hill. But it's positive to see that more
it's positive news.
About,
good stuff.
Yeah, thinking about doing a few things. All right, next.
Number three.
Okay, so yesterday we had our Real Heroes 400. You heard it here on CBS Sports Radio 1140. Kevin Harvick won his 50th NASCAR event, which is very amazing. But we always forget, and I think it's just silliness, but NASCAR, because of just how cars are set up, they've issued penalties for what are known as lug nut violations, where lug nuts were not secured on the vehicles.
I had no idea that this was a thing, Paul. And granted, I know that there had to be some sort of rules system considering how just cars are, because you have your team that attends to the car and then you have the driver. You're all one team, but it's two different things. But after the race, after the fact. It's such a weird thing to hand down, but I suppose it's the way things are.
Yeah, it's odd. And the reason why I think it's odd this time around, and because the race winner actually got penalized as well, the crew chief got penalized $10,000 for having unsecured lug nuts, was the fact that these crew chiefs had to build the cars for this specific race without even testing them. They had to put the cars together
off track.
And the first time they actually, there were no qualifying races. There were no runs.
That is crazy to me. That's huge liability.
Right. It was, gentlemen, start your engines. Okay, start the engines. Now what?
Yeah, what if the wheels fall off?
We had a crash in the first lap of yesterday's race. It ended up, being great, and NASCAR had its highest ratings ever, and as a matter of fact, sports had its highest ratings ever for a competitive sporting event since the Daytona 500 back in February. Like, of all sports, basketball, I mean, even the tournaments, it was the highest watched. So, it's great to have, sports back. Again, the lug nut thing is a little bit weird for me.
Right.
But we have more racing coming up tomorrow at 4:30. We have NASCAR Nextel Cup Series, and then back to another a regular Cup Series coming up on Wednesday. That's a 3:30 start on that one, so we'll be a little bit interrupted here during the show. So NASCAR's back. Good to have it back. Good to have sports back. All right, next.
Absolutely.
Number four.
All right, so finally, the Prince has arrived in Las Vegas. The Raiders signing unrestricted free agent Prince Amukamara, his 10th season in the NFL, first with the Las Vegas Raiders. He spent the last three seasons with the Bears, someone that they certainly needed when it comes to the secondary, and they've revamped this entire back seven, on defense, which is pretty amazing. And I have a gut feeling this might be the last move they need to make before the training camps begin in August.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, Paul, they've been collecting defensive backs, especially if they've played for the New York Giants at some point in their careers. Prince Amukamara fits that bill, and so does Eli Apple. But you can never have too many, especially with how injuries have been going these last few years, especially in that backfield. So he's a big name. He's a champion himself and a very seasoned veteran. So he's a good guy to have in the room, and hopefully that'll translate on the field.
All right, that's all. Moving on.
Number five.
Okay, so we all watched The Last Dance. Had its highest ratings ever. According to ESPN, the docuseries averaged 5.6 million viewers for the Michael Jordan and Chicago Bulls 10-part documentary. And while The Last Dance has completed and we all got our fill of sports documentaries, of which there are a lot of them, by the way, you don't really need to hunt very far.
No.
ESPN, beginning on Wednesday night at 6 o'clock, they will show that game, the game that kind of clinched The Last Dance documentary, Game 6 of the 98 Finals. Where we learned that Michael Jordan, we learned a lot about Michael Jordan over this thing, but obviously
it's been a fully immersive experience. Paul.
Yep, but you'll get to see some never before seen footage shot during the Last Dance documentary as well as the game, and you get to see Air Jordan take his final shot as a professional basketball player. So. Kind of cool.
I'll ask you this, Paul. Now that we've had 20 hours, there's going to be more on the horizon, and there's been how many think pieces written and how many minutes that we've discussed this.
Sure.
When's the next time you want to talk about Michael Jordan after today?
Michael Jordan. After today, probably, he's already in the Hall of Fame.
Right. But, do you have a hunger to continue to invest and to learn and to kind of synthesize that timeline and information about him? Is that hunger still there, or are you kind of tapped out on him right now?
I think for Jordan, I think it was great to have the documentary. At least, I think for me, because it reminded me of how great he was. And, mm-hmm. Having watched him in his prime, never having him seen in person, but watched, pretty much every game that the Bulls were involved in. I mean, I had a Jordan poster on my wall. Not even like one of the flashy posters. I had the one that came from Sports Illustrated that literally had Michael Jordan printed in the white background in like Times New Roman font. And then a picture of Michael, and then literally like a picture of Michael Jordan soaring through the air in his traditional Air Jordan. And that was pretty much it. I had him and Larry Bird.
Yeah, you got the clean branding
Jordan and Dr. J, actually. I was a big Julius Erving fan. I was a huge 76ers fan as a kid, as a teen.
I mean, I wasn't obviously really conscious for much of this, or at least not watching with the same lenses that everybody else was. But, like, honestly, I'm so Michael Jordan'd out after this. Like, I'm good for a while. Maybe in a few months so I can revisit it. But I'm like, let's talk about a different team or a different person for just a hot sec, you know?
The funny part about that is that how many other athletes could you go into, and I know this, it's a discussion for another day, and I've seen this as well, but you know, you talk about athletes that people would be interested in, and being able to tell a compelling story like this just based on how this all set up and having that footage available too of that, I mean, really that last run, you have access to this footage that nobody had seen and had even thought about, you know, resurrecting until, you know, legit, you know, this year.
And it doesn't even have to be centered around a championship team or anything, because obviously those are great stories, but we hear that story all the time about the team overcoming drama and whatever else, but there's so many different just narratives in sports that I would like to explore, and like you said, it is a much larger conversation and one that everybody's going to probably be having with themselves over these next few weeks, but nonetheless, I think that there's going to be definitely a kick in the pants for more 30 for 30 type stuff, for more stuff like this to pair with just the overall documentary surge that we've experienced as we've all started streaming everything.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. We find ourselves with more time, and Michael Jordan and the Last Dance giving us all a brief respite on Sunday nights and rewatching on Monday mornings. From what we are all dealing with, which is up until a couple, you know, I don't know, 48 hours ago, a lack of actual sports that did not involve ultimate fighting. So we're back with that, and it's great to have that back. Your check down, powered by Radio.com Sports, 5 biggest stories of the afternoon. Coming up next, checking out when you can't actually go out. Lindsay's got some great stories coming up.
You found the Playmakers on CBS Sports Radio 1140.
Paul Ihander, Lindsey Brown with you on this Monday afternoon. Thanks for making us a part of your day, as a lot of you folks are rolling around. Seriously, would you quit, like, beeping at me? So strange. No, see, I put my... I think a lot of folks deal with this, too, because right now it's the end of the school year, so the school district is literally, like, sending out texts and group chats and things like this. Hey,
there's a lot of digital flare guns going off.
Yeah, checking with your teachers, you know, as if you don't give my six-year-old enough homework as it is.
Right.
Like, it's, you know, I'm like, come on, it's three days left in the year. Like,
yeah,
they stopped learning literally 4 weeks ago. Not a knock against teachers, but just reality.
Just let them grasp
folks.
At straws, Paul. Just let them send you guys off to the summer vacation and or to whatever this is. And you know, it's I'm sure it's overwhelming, especially when it's we get beeped so much as it is. You know, when you're on your phone and technology, it's hard to just kind of unplug.
Right, and for sure, and I think for a lot of folks, you know, a lot of parents, a lot of people, it's a little overwhelming right now, including former Olympian and gold medalist Michael Phelps. He wrote a big article for ESPN today talking about how he felt incredibly, or still continues to feel incredibly overwhelmed, and he's retreated into routines a little bit. He's been dealing with mental health issues for several years, been very public about it, though not a real big surprise. He, you know, he has three kids. He and his wife married, three children. That's going to be tough because they're all young kids.
Sure.
And admits to having a little bit of a blow up with her too, because, you know, hey, he's being cooped up and strange thoughts get stuck in your head like all of us do. You know, and for some it's fairly normal. You can normalize it and compartmentalize it and get through it, but for others it tends to be a little bit of a challenge. Lindsay, I'm just going to put it out there. Lindsay asked for a day off on Friday because, you know, she was dealing with a little bit of heaviness. You know, I think that's the best way to put it, Lindsay.
Yeah, honestly, and that's why I think it's important to talk about it, and it's ironic that Michael Phelps kind of released this today, because not that I'm comparing myself to the Olympic greatness that is Michael Phelps, but there are a lot
of
things that he and I have in common, you know.
Yeah, no one's asking you to compare yourself to an Olympic athlete here, Lindsay.
Correct.
You are who you are, and we are all who we are at this point. We're all going through it too. You know, again, some people deal with it in different ways, and you've dealt it with your own way.
Right. And as you said, Paul, everybody is dealing with a ton of different challenges and stressors and what have you. But like Michael Phelps, like so many people across the country and the world, you know, we were dealing with a lot of stuff before this even happened. And when you have mental health issues, when you have mental health illnesses like Phelps has, where he has anxiety, depression, PTSD, ADHD, I have a couple of those myself. It's when everything starts to crash down around you, it becomes so overwhelming that you retreat back into your own head. I'm sure everybody has been here at least for a few moments at some point in time. But last week, even early on in the week, I was getting headaches. I was having back pain. My stomach was upset. I was having trouble eating and sleeping. And granted, there are other outside sources going on, like a change in medication or a change in some other part of your routine. But regardless, I was disrupted. And so because it's harder for me to be settled just in general with all that's going on, plus the added disruption of last week, I kept pushing, Paul. I'm like, I'm fine. I can still do this. I can still prep for the show. And I did, and I do. And the show, for the most part, I hope sounds pretty good to all of you. And I try to bring my best each and every day. And that's never been a problem for me, Paul. I've always been a performer person. I've always been ready to go at game time. Michael Phelps is the same way. You can say the same thing about Michael Jordan last night when they were talking about that flu game and how there's just this switch to push. And it's important to do that at some points, like when Michael did when they were going through the finals. He pushes through the flu game, has one of the greatest performances of all time, and he is exalted for it for decades after the fact. But that's a very special type of situation. You don't always need to push through. And I think that's where I got kind of cloudy, Paul, and I'm sure everybody else is that just because you see other people pushing in situations that may look easier than yours, or maybe they're different in general, but you see people constantly doing things that you're not, and you feel like you have to, and you feel like you always have to show up and push through. And that's a very common mentality when it comes to sports and to team sports, and me being a hockey player, it makes sense. People go out and break their legs all the time, Paul. Like, we've seen it, right?
Yes, we've seen dislocated thumbs where guys and gals will walk off the court and have it pop back into place, or a shoulder, or you know, whatever it is. You know, I always thought it was unusual when it came to just injuries, and I know it's a little bit different physically than it is mentally, mm-hmm. but physical injuries where, you know, where people would sit out for ingrown toenails and things like that. And I'm like, I get it that it affects your performance, but you know, at a certain point, you know, still, you know, hey, suck that one up. And I understand the competitive nature of sports and where people want to be in, you know, especially, you know, whether it's, you know, is sports your profession, or if sports is just a hobby that you take seriously or whatnot. You know, I play golf with guys that, you know, take lessons on the regular, even though they are, you know, scratch handicap, you know, one handicap guys. They'll take lessons because mm-hmm. they want to be better, and they'll push through things, and, you know, they'll push through some of the aches and the pains and some of that mental game. You know, golf is a very mental game.
And there's a
game.
Time and a place for it. There's absolutely a time and place for it. And there's times to push through and to get better and say, you know what, I do have a lot of calluses on my hand and blisters from hitting too many golf balls, but I want to make sure that my short game is really tuned up for next week. But when you constantly choose that extending yourself, telling yourself no, rejecting what you need, it becomes a habit. And when you have a brain like Michael Phelps, when you have a brain like mine, or you get under a lot of stress like a lot of people are, you get into the bad routines. And when you're in that fog and you start kind of spiraling and stuff, it's hard to even recognize that you're even there. And so for me, that came Thursday or Friday morning at 4 a.m. as I laid awake, just kind of ruminating on, I need a break. I need a break. But I feel so bad about putting this on Paul. You waited. You should have told him earlier in the week, so you have to push through it. And then eventually I was just like, all right, we have to wake up. And if we're still feeling like crap, even just a little bit, we're going to have to do something about it. And then I still called my friends and asked them if it was okay, if I could take a day off, if I could take a minute to kind of regather myself. Because at this point, Paul, outside of the show, like I said, I'm always down to perform. I'm always going to be there for that. But that means I will ignore the rest of everything else, the rest of my life, including myself, including my absolute disaster of an apartment. And when you do that continuously, that's where you get into trouble. And so when I finally was able to work up the courage and feel like I was able to ask this of myself and permit myself to do it, I felt instantly so much better. And I feel like I made a lot of realizations about myself and how I work just by taking that day off, Paul. It's just one day. And so I wanted to make sure, like Michael kind of did for me today with this article, and as he has done throughout his course of his post-career, where he's been a huge advocate for mental health and for seeking help, I wanted to do the same today. If people are feeling burnt out, or if they feel like everybody else is still going and that they need to do it or they need to keep up with the boys, which is a huge mentality that I have that I'm trying to work on, that you don't, it's okay to take a day. It's okay to take a minute. And honestly, you should, because you'd be surprised how much even just one day of a good disruption can kind of help you put you back on the right track. Doesn't mean you do nothing for 3 days. I went hiking. I did a bunch of things. I wanted to make sure I gave myself a chance to kind of filter out some of the bad stuff. But you got to give yourself the chance, you know? So I wanted to do that today. But I thank you, Paul, for letting me do that.
Paul Iander, Lindsey Brown, Playmakers here on CBS Sports Radio, 1140. And you talk about, you know, just checking out. You know, when you can't go out, and a lot of folks, you know, they feel that burn right now and feel the burnout.
Right.
A lot of folks been working hard and trying to do things day to day, whether it's inside their home or outside their home, providing for themselves, providing for their families, and, you know, again, mentally and physically, in the bank accounts, wherever it needs to be. And it's okay to ask for help. It really is.
Yep.
It,
and you got to listen to yourself, too. You got to actually listen to it.
Mm-hmm. That helps. It you know, I always say I'm burned out. It's just always one of those things. But I'm driven differently than other people, and others may fall into the same category. I mean, I think it would be one of those interesting case studies where you and I could sit on a stage and we could just start listing a few things. And if we were able to, it's like, all right, for those of you who relate to Lindsay, sit on this side of the auditorium.
Yeah, exactly.
And for those of you who are driven by the things that are driven that Paul is driven by, sit on this side. I think it would be one of those interesting.
Pole.
Mm-hmm. Those kinds of things. I always find it interesting because I'm a good poker player up to a certain aspect. Like, you know, I can keep a lot of things in check and keep things really on the level. But when I play like live poker, it's strange. I'll go into a poker room, and if I'm not wearing like 5 layers of clothing, people could see through me right away because my heart starts pounding if I get some awesome, you know, I get dealt a couple of jacks, and I just, oh my goodness, I'm just going to totally wipe the board of these people. But I'm just like staring at people. I know why people play poker behind glasses, you know, because first of all, there's some fear because they're a fear that, you know, they've got a monster tell.
Exactly.
You know, and
but that's what I mean.
You know,
people have to be okay with taking off the glasses. I feel like a lot of people are scared of that for a bunch of different reasons, whether it's being vulnerable or they don't want to face it or they've tried to kind of dig themselves out or deal with some trauma or some stress that they failed to do or didn't get as far as they would like to last time. That's the thing. I just feel like as a community and as a society, we're kind of slowly changing this attitude, and I think it's kind of gone into hyperspeed with all of this going around with the pandemic and stuff, because it's put a spotlight on mental health, and where it's putting everybody in a not a completely similar situation, but a very, you know, shared one, and putting a lot of stress on it. So I think it'll be a good thing, but people have to be able to take off the glasses and to deal with some of that stuff too.
Sure,
some people.
I have a friend of mine who has anxiety about going out and getting a haircut.
Yeah.
I'm like, listen, it's about your personal comfort more than anything else. It really is. I'm like, hey,
and you
listen,
can build
we can
up
all,
to it.
We can all have crazy hair. It's true. It's actually kind of fun.
Mm-hmm. If that anxiety's there, you just got to topple it. You don't have to take the entire task down at once. You do a little. How about you just say, all right, I'll leave my house and go for a drive around the block. And then you do a mile, and then you drive by the hair place. And then you get out of the car by the hair place. You can do that. If that's what it needs to be done to make you feel comfortable, do it. Don't feel bad about it. But there's no shame in having the anxiety of it.
Coming up next, sports is restarting. We had so many events. Well, we had like 5. But we had so many events over this past weekend. Do we really need fans in the stands? We'll talk about that next.
You found the Playmakers on CBS Sports Radio 1140.
Paul and Lindsay, Playmakers. Thanks for hanging out with us on this Monday. We had a lot of sports over the weekend. I want to ask you before I pose the question, Lindsay, did you watch any of it?
No.
Okay. All right.
I was busy having revelations, okay, Paul?
Okay, so listen, there was UFC, there was Bundesliga soccer, which I actually turned on. So, like, Dasko asked me, like, hey, what's the most thing you're excited about? And I did say the NASCAR event, and I said golf to a certain extent.
Right.
But, you know, I wanted to see NASCAR. It's just faster. I'm a little more familiar with it than German soccer, to be honest. And the German soccer on Saturday morning, while it was fine to have on the air, it was weird because – and my son came downstairs that morning because it started like 6 a.m., 5:30 in the morning. And I managed to catch the entire second half of whoever was playing. Mm-hmm. I didn't care. You know, that's how bad I wanted it. I didn't care. And the game was pretty much over. It was 3-0 already, and they put on a fourth goal, which was fine. because, you know, scoring and sports. But there was nobody in the stands. And my son came down and he goes – and he asked me this perfectly point blank. And I couldn't have made this up. He goes, is this a practice?
And wow.
I go, no, buddy, it's not. He goes, well, why is there nobody there? And I had to explain to him. I said, buddy, you know, this is what we're going through. And he's like, oh, okay, you know, I understand. But then he just kind of dropped it. And I went,
right,
okay. So at first glance, it literally looks like a scrimmage because there's mm-hmm. nobody there.
Yeah, because kids are the most honest ones out there. They see right, how it is.
And I thought to myself, I was like, okay, now I get it why the fan experience at these games where you're feeding off the fans, where you're feeding off the crowd noise. Mm-hmm. Now I get it because it was at the home stadium of whatever German team it was. And every time they scored, they had four goals. They played like the chanting. They played like the fight song chanting or whatever it is.
Right.
And there was still a PA guy announcing the substitutions because they get five substitutions. Now he's still announcing them, but it was, you know, he was announcing it to, you know, 12 security guards.
Yeah, to echoes. That's who he was announcing.
Yeah, and you could hear like people, you know, the ball when it went out of play, like hitting the stands. It literally sounded like you were playing in like a seventh grade gymnasium.
Yeah,
you know, so
it's weird.
For that experience, you kind of need it.
Yeah, and I think it's really interesting that angle you draw with your son there, Paul, because as I said, they see it exactly how it is and as plain as day. And that's what's lacking. It's the atmosphere, it's the excitement, and that's what really I think hooks all of our brains into sports. Obviously when we're young and we're kids, and usually when you like sports and you're as a kid, you're gonna really like it as an adult. But that still plays. We're not gonna just be able to say, oh, it's better where we're gonna be able to put it in the back of our mind and not notice it all the time. It's going to be a little bit different. It's gonna be weird, but it's going to be interesting how each sport kind of takes their own unique atmosphere and tries to artificially create it or not in general. I think it's going to be very much a creative choice. But do you think it affected the gameplay at all? Because that's what I guess is really important.
I'm not sure it affected the gameplay. I expected a lot of rust, to be honest, among a lot of the players while they had been training. Sure. It's not like they had been in a real, you know, kind of live situation. It equates to kind of like baseball's opening day when they come mm-hmm. out there. And, you know, usually the scores are pretty low. It's, you know, 3-1, 2-1, whatever it is. Not just because
Everybody's getting their timing down, right?
Mm-hmm. Right. Not every pitcher is going to come is the ace of the, you know, major leagues. There's only so many to go around, you know, and someone's going to have a bad day. But, you know, it's kind of like it's a little sloppy. It's not, you know, quite where you want it to be, but it was there. It was present. It was the same way with golf. I didn't care for the golf event, the Ricky Fowler Rory event. It just lacked
right.
for me. I'm listening to it. I'm waiting for some trash talk or something to happen.
It wasn't like an actual golf match. It was obviously for charity. It was very important. It was great that it was, but it wasn't like what you're used to seeing in terms of a format for golf.
It still wasn't even it didn't even feel like they were friends golfing. It was just a bunch of guys with some bad facial hair just kind of hitting balls around.
Oh, wow.
You know?
High praise. So, high praise.
Anyway, you know, but you know, hey, it's back. Happy to have it back. But mm-hmm. just some interesting observations there. All right, coming up next, our daily pep talk.
You found the Playmakers on CBS Sports Radio 1140.
Sometimes you just need a little bit of a pick-me-up on an afternoon. Tough times call for sometimes some tough love, but also it calls for some motivation. It's time for your daily pep talk here. And today's pep talk is about someone who's hit those lowest lows and recovered and now is one of the most recognizable personalities in boxing as we roll tape here on Tyson Fury.
I didn't have no motivation to do it. Zero motivation to do anything. Zero motivation to have a shave, zero to brush your teeth, even have a shower, nothing. I can't tell you in words how I felt, how down I was. When you lose control of your own mind, you're in a bad place. I just wanted to show the world that if mental health could bring somebody as big as me and as strong as me and, you know, the stereotype heavyweight champion of the world to my knees, then it could bring anybody to the knees. And I thought to myself, if I can show the world that you can come back from it and to get back in shape and get back to the top, then anybody can do it. I knew something was wrong with me my whole life. Growing up as a child, I feel a loneliness even when I was with other people. I wasn't a confident character what you see today. I was a very shy, reserved, skinny little whippet kid. I was always told that I couldn't do stuff and I'd never do anything, I'd never achieve anything. So that made me worse, basically. I've experienced the highest highs and the lowest lows in life. Something I'd worked for my whole life, and when I finally achieved it, it was like, oh, well, that was a load of rubbish. I wasn't expecting now to feel like this. Like I said to you before, I just felt like an emptiness, a deep, gaping hole of nothing. Darkness and grey clouds. Every day was grey. I felt like I had nothing to look forward to. I was worthless. It was just a horrible, horrible feeling that people need to understand that many, many people are in the same boat. They don't have to be very successful sports athletes to feel like this. Anybody from day to day has the same feelings. What does it all mean? What does being a world champion really mean? But what I was trying to say was, what does it all really mean when I'm not well on the inside? I was in a position of power. I had glory, fame, achievements, money, a family, all earthly assets that one could want. But it meant nothing, so they couldn't understand why it would just feel like this. The repetitive thinking, the same stuff day in, day out, it won't go away. And the more I'm trying to think, right, I want to be positive, negative, 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 negative. And everyone I was around was getting negative too because I was putting it on. This went on for 18 months of me battling my own self every day, drinking, abusing my body, eating rubbish, taking drugs. Everything I stood for didn't matter anymore. I've never ever experienced anything in my whole life. Even though I'd had anxiety before, this was the king daddy of all anxiety attacks. I was so sure I was going to die. But nothing mattered. I didn't care. All I wanted was atonement for my sins. I can't tell you in words how I felt, how down I was. When you lose control of your own mind, you're in a bad place. And it's a silent killer. It's almost like carbon monoxide poison. You can't smell it, you can't taste it, you can't feel it, but you die. The way I explain mental health is you bottle up and bottle up and bottle up and then it just explodes. You can't bottle anymore. And that's when you're having your bad times. And I was drinking every day, something I'd never done in my life, to try and wash me sorrows away. But it come to a stage where, that's one way of doing it, but I'm going heavier and heavier. I was gaining 380, 390, 400 pounds, and I was very unhealthy. I didn't fit in anything I owned anymore. It wasn't me anymore. I had two bodies. Turning point was, I went out Halloween dressed as a skeleton in a fancy dress party. I went out about 9 o'clock and I expected to stay out all night and get smashed. I had one drink. I looked around me and I thought, what am I doing? I'm back normal again now, yeah. I'm back, like, thinking straight. Still drinking, but I'm thinking sensible again. And I called out to my wife. I said, Paris, here. She said, what? I said, tomorrow. I said, I start to turn my life around. I said, I promise you. I said, I'm going to do it. I'm definitely going to do it. From that day, I got my tracksuit on in the morning and I was going to run 2 miles. I got about 200 yards and stopped. And I thought, right, I can't run. I've run all my life. I've always been a very good runner. And I got 200 yards and I was totally gone. I could feel my belly moving on. It wasn't like a fat like jelly. It was like solid brick. It was a horrible feeling. I thought, okay, I'm going to walk the rest. And I walked. And every day I'd go out on the canal and I'd do a little run in my sweatsuit. And every day I'd get a little bit further until I was doing 4 or 5 miles again. And then I'd come back and I worked my way back and we worked repetitively, day in, day out, day in, day out. And at that time I was still sleeping with the light on. I couldn't sleep in the dark. You need to stimulate the mind. And I think training is a perfect way to do it. Working out, exercising. Whether you can do a lot or a little, you must do something. I give myself short-term goals and long-term goals. And I plan things more now. where if I'm just not got anything on the horizon, I tend to wander and my mind goes AWOL. But when I've got something on plan and I've got things going and I want to do this and this, even if it's, it doesn't have to be big things, it can be small, tiny goals that mean something to you as a person, as an individual. I'm very, very sure that working out and having a routine in your life is the answer for mental health problems. I want you to know that every day for 2 years was very grey and dark for me. But it will come back great again. You will have sunshine days again. Rose-coloured days warmed by the sun.
That's a lot. That's some good
stuff.
It
is. It is for sure. Tyson Fury, lineal heavyweight champion. Deep look into kind of where his head is at, and a guy who's certainly had mistakes and missteps and has moved forward as best as we all think we can see, at least in front of us.
Absolutely. And I think about what he had to say that I found really interesting is what is his ability to kind of put you in his head and his thought process and that kind of conversation that you have with yourself, especially when you're trying to break out of a routine or a habit, or like he was trying to start running again, be like, I can't do it. It's too hard, even though you've already built yourself up to it. And it's just, you know, it's those little decisions you make. It's all upstairs. It's not a huge thing. And it's like you said, it's little steps. So it's good to have a reminder.
No doubt. Daily Pep Talk every day at 3:50, and you can listen to it anytime with the freeradio.com app with the rewind feature. All right, Lindsay, you actually have about 10 seconds or so.
We have so much room to stretch out, and we are actually going to get deep into The Last Dance episodes 9 and 10 last night with Tony Cordasco, including 4 sports pests that drive us nuts. That's more in sports on the other side of the break.
Inside information on your teams. Honest opinion and the biggest names in sports. It's time, Las Vegas, for the Playmakers.
Our number 2 of the Playmakers starting literally right now. It is 4 o'clock p.m. on May 18th. It is Monday. My name is Lindsay Brown, and I am joined, as I am each and every second hour of the program, by Uncle Tony Cordasco. Dasco, what is up, my dude?
Oh, not quite a lot. You know, do you watch any of these gaming streams on Twitch? I was trying to watch the NHL Fortnite charity event today.
No, I play games myself, but I'm not one of those. I'm not one of those that'll watch other people play. But I know that is a huge thing with the kiddos.
It's not good. Like I don't understand it. I was trying to grasp it, and you know, I missed the VGK team.
Dasco.
Well, it was Carlson and Tuck. I don't know how they fared today. But the players are talking. How do you talk and play at the same time? You know, I'm trying to get cool with it. You know, I'm trying
to be
hip.
Yeah, you're hip.
I'm trying to be hip with Twitch, but evidently I don't get it. I don't like watching other people play games, playing the video.
Well,
games.
That's okay. You don't have to watch people play video games, but you have to admit it's pretty much it's the same thing as watching sports. Why aren't you playing sports? Why would you watch grown men and women play or amateurs, whatever? I don't know, just because
different.
I like it.
It's
same people,
different.
They just like doing it.
Well, this
they
is my strategy. I'm going to get a shield. Okay, great. Now go get it.
Well, there it is. Maybe you just haven't found your game yet. I've been, I think in my quarantine, I've dedicated at least 60 hours towards my Assassin's Creed game, and I don't think I'm even halfway done with it. And so don't judge me. I'm living my best life right now. But Dasco, do you have something that you would like to shamelessly self-promote that came out of your brand that you put on social media streams? Because I know we got to get to your Don't At Me with Uncle Dasco portion of our first segment here on The Playmakers.
Okay, so I've got an update for you. You may recall my tweet last week, right? I'm hoping hand hearts aren't still a thing when the pandemic ends.
Yes.
Well, we have a hand heart update.
Oh, do tell.
Did you see? Well, no? Twitter announced its latest emoji, the hand heart. Did you see that?
Oh, boy. No, I didn't see that.
I had no idea, no clue this was happening, but it comes out last week, and they must have seen my affinity for hand hearts.
Yeah, they must have said, you know what? We need to give Tony Cordasco something here. We need to make sure we throw him a bone. Hand hearts for love. So you're not in favor of the hand heart emoji?
No, you know that. Come on, don't tease me here.
I'm just saying, Dasco, we don't want to be negative this whole time. Like, we gotta have a little pep in our step. I took Friday off for a reason. You can't just tear it all back down right away.
Yeah, this is true. Give me till the bottom of the hour.
Yeah, exactly. That's all right, Dasko. And thank you for the update on the hand hearts. It's a very near and dear story to all
of us.
You'll
be using that emoji a lot. I know. I just feel it.
Yes. You know me and emojis, Dasko. They are my love language. Since we're, you know, staying so positive, and the last dance wrapped up last night, episodes 9 and 10 airing on ESPN about the 97-98 Bulls, in the beginning of the ninth episode, there was a lot of Indiana Pacers because they were one of the most formidable opponents for the Bulls. Michael Jordan said it himself, besides the Detroit Pistons, that the Indiana Pacers gave them the most trouble in the Eastern Conference. And a big reason for the Indiana Pacers' success in being a pest to Michael Jordan and that quest for the second three-peat was Reggie Miller. And for those of you that aren't super familiar with Reggie Miller, there's a 30 for 30 on him. You need to go watch it. But he's one of the most prolific trash talkers in the history of the NBA and one of the most prolific pests. And so in honor of him and the end of The Last Dance, our theme for today's Four of a Kind, Dasko, are four sports pests that drive us bonkers. So do you want to lead things off?
Okay, I'll do that. So one of the biggest pests in all of sports, Jose Altuve. Altuve. So outside of the sign-stealing scandal, right, he's the ultimate pest. He really is. The guy that wore the buzzer to let his teammates know a pitch was coming. But he's 5'6", and he's really hard to pitch to because he's so short.
He's a little guy.
Yeah, he's a little guy, and then he crouches down, and then he talks, and he's just antsy at the plate.
Works the system because the system's not built for him.
No, but he has some power, 128 total homers and 9 MLB seasons. And once he's on base, too, he's a mega pest because he's got like 254 stolen bases.
Oh,
that
is annoying.
And the walk-off homer against the Yankees and Aroldis Chapman last fall. We won't get into that. Mm. But he is by far, in my estimation, one of the biggest pests in all sports. We used to have the Mets used to have Lenny Dykstra, and they called him Nails. And he was a leadoff guy, and he would just drive pitchers batty. And that's what Altuve does. Same thing.
Yeah, Altuve, I don't know if I would have put him as a sports pest before all of the things kind of came down with the Astros, with all the signs, as you said, all the violations. But there are people that there are sports pests that are annoying because they talk a lot of trash, or they're pests, or there are people that are annoying because they're just so good at their job. And to my neck for my first submission here for one of my four sports pests that drive me bonkers is another short guy, different sport, and his name is Brad Marchand, Dasko, and he's part of the Boston Bruins. He's a forward on that team, and arguably probably the most disliked player in the NHL, unless you're a Boston Bruins fan. Endearingly nicknamed the Rat by many, he's licked people's noses. He has tons of dirty hits to his name, cheap shots, lots of trash talking. But one of the annoying things about him, other than him just being a complete pest, Dasko, is that he's actually really good. And that's really frustrating when people are really good and they still decide to play in a dirty manner. And that's exactly what Marchand does. And it's unfortunate because he's 32 years old, Dasko. He's in his 11th season, all of which have been with the Boston Bruins. He had 87 points until the season was paused this season. He had 100 points last year. Like, those are big time MVP consideration numbers, you know, if Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl aren't going nuts in the Western Conference. But not, like I said, when you're that good and you've won a cup and you've let a couple of others slip through your fingers, I just hate it when people have to be dirty players and to still have that skill. You know what I mean? It's just unfortunate.
I think to get past consideration, correct me if I'm wrong, but you have to, they're good when they're on your team. But
exactly.
If you're an opponent of that player, then you just want to crush him.
Exactly.
So,
only loved by the city that they reside in.
Yeah, like Tom Wilson. Tom Wilson.
Exactly.
Probably good if you play on the same team as him, but you would hate him if you are an opponent, and you do.
Correct.
And he spends so much time in the penalty box, but he also draws a lot of penalties himself because he gets under the opponent's skin. And he had the awful hit, as we know, on Oscar Sundquist, the exhibition game against St. Louis. And last winter, he started the big brawl with the Bruins by spearing David Pastrnak and then brawling with him. And, of course, Ryan Reaves actually paid back Wilson in 2018 when he was ejected for concussing Wilson. I like when those two battle, Reaves and Wilson.
Oh, yeah.
It's a lot of fun. But he is an ultimate pest. He's a pest. He's an absolute pest. I'm going to give you a clue here. I'm going to have at least one more hockey player.
Well, this is very exciting because I was trying to, I was going to put Tom Wilson on mine, and I was coming up obviously with a lot more hockey players because A, that's my main sport, but B, that the sport of hockey lends itself to the pestering nature of sports for personalities like Brad Marchand, like Tom Wilson, because you have the physicality, but then you have the in between the whistles and all of that, that kind of goes into it. It's different across each and every sport. And that's why we're talking about four sports pests that drive us bonkers in honor of Reggie Miller, being a thorn in the side of Michael Jordan. Wasn't enough to deter him from his ultimate goal, but enough to leave a mark. And you're absolutely right with the Tom Wilson inclusion there, Dasko. But my next pick here is actually from the tennis world, and a tennis player in Nick Kyrgios. If you're not familiar, that I'm kind of surprised because he's a pretty decent tennis player. He's currently ranked number 40 in the world. The highest, he was ranked 13th in 2016. But this guy, if you Google him, the first 18 articles are not going to be about how good he is about tennis. They're going to be about how his career is littered with fines and suspensions and tanking allegations and verbal abuse of officials and opponents and unsportsmanlike conduct and not caring about tennis, saying that he doesn't like tennis. And that's fine. You don't have to like the job that you're in. Plenty of people do that, and I understand that. But when it comes to the verbal abuse, when it comes to the tanking accusations, I mean, the guy, Dasko, in one tournament in 2019, the Cincinnati Masters, he was fined for five separate incidents for an ATP record fine of $113,000. That's just in one tournament, Dasko, and there's multiple instances of this. And as I said, there's nothing wrong with being a professional athlete and not loving the game or loving the sport that you play or what you do for your job. But it just rubs people the wrong way. And you can't really expect to have a lot of people in your corner, especially when you're playing a sport, having a lifestyle that you do have and kind of taking it for granted in some ways, shapes, and form. And it's just, it's unfortunate because, as I said, he was 13th in the world just a few years ago. Like, that's elite, elite, elite company. But he's still not making friends. He even went on Instagram Live yesterday, I think, Dasko, with Andy Murray and said, hey, by the way, I think you're better than Novak Djokovic and Rafael Nadal. Like, he just likes stirring the pot, and that's why he's a pest.
A modern-day John McEnroe.
Yeah, John McEnroe says he's disrespectful. That's how disrespectful Nick Kyrgios is. Like, that's, he's gone on record in saying so. So that's why he's one of the biggest sports pests that drive me absolutely bonkers. What's your next pick, Dasko?
Evander Kane. I'm going to go with the local angle. One. Okay, mm-hmm. So he finally settles the $500,000 marker with the Cosmopolitan, but he still is one of the biggest pests in the NHL and against the Vegas Golden Knights. So he and Ryan Reeves, they went out in the preseason, and they've got a rivalry that's been going back to when Reeves played for the Brandon Wheat Kings and Kane played for the Vancouver Giants. And he still gets under the skin, and he still pesters Reeves. And they needle each other, and they talk a lot. Remember when Kane said that Reeves was a babysitter, and then Reeves said he was the highest paid babysitter in the world, if that's true. And then in game three of the playoffs, remember Reeves called out Kane last year because Kane wouldn't fight him. And then they finally fought, but Kane knows how to get under players' skin. And
he does.
He is absolutely a pest.
Absolutely, and one that is very much not welcome in this town of Las Vegas, at least when he is on his business. Good submission there.
You didn't expect me to go hockey. I know.
I didn't expect you to go 3 for 4 for hockey, but I'm proud of you for doing so, and I'm glad that I didn't go the hockey heavy angle. Well, I know, but you've done... either way, I got two left, but I'm glad that I diversified a little bit because we don't want it all to be about hockey, even though it is the best sport out of all of them. It's okay. The next person or sports figure that I think is a huge pest and drives me bonkers, it's weird because he used to play for a team that I was a fan of, and that would be A.J. Pierzynski. He was a catcher.
You always go back to Pierzynski.
Yeah,
I love it.
Exactly. Always go back to Pierzynski because he retired in 2016, but he started his career with the Minnesota Twins. And back in the day, Dasko, I played softball, and I was a catcher as well. And so after he left the Twins, where it was a very much the early 2000s were a really good spot for the Minnesota Twins organization in terms of we win pennants, but we don't win any championships. Once we get to see your Yankees, Dasko, we might as well pack up and go home, and we see him all the time. But when it comes to like our rivalry with the White Sox and other Central Division foes, like it was a really good time to be a Twins fan. And so after he went to San Francisco, he ended up being on the White Sox for a few seasons and even being part of a huge part of their 2005 World Series season. But literally, this guy was voted in 2012 as the most hated player in Major League Baseball. Ozzie Guillen, the manager for the White Sox for a long time and the Miami Marlins, said, if you play against him, you hate him. If you play with him, you hate him a little less. And that's coming from Ozzie Guillen, who's, again, one of the most polarizing personalities and former players and managers in the game, somebody that is not well-liked by a lot of people. So if he's saying that, it's definitely an outlier in A.J. Pierzynski. And so, as I said, the rivalry between the Twins and the White Sox were super heated. He was a huge trash talker. He would fight people all the time. He was just one of those guys, chip on the shoulder. And I get it. I respect it. But gee dang it, he drove me nuts, even though he wasn't technically a Minnesota product at first.
Now, it might have been Guillen who also said at one point, from what I remember, that he said Pierzynski, I think it was Guillen, who said Pierzynski cost them a lot of strike calls because he was always chatting with the umpires.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But Dasko is one of 10 catchers to have over 2,000 hits. Like, that's the other thing, too, is, like, he backed it up. It wasn't just, like, in some sense, I know it's because baseball and the Hall of Fame is, like, this huge thing, but his resume, actually, it's not crazy to think that he would be considered. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Not crazy.
My last one I'm going to go with is Draymond Green. You know, he said he was better than Charles Barkley. He said he and Steph Curry would dominate Shaq and the Lakers in the pick and roll this past week. He just has a lot of smoke these days. And on the court, we know about the groin hits. Yep, the groin hits on the court, like the one he gave LeBron in the NBA Finals a couple of years back. The kick to Steven Adams' groin in the loss to the Thunder a couple of years ago. I mean, he's a pretty pesky defender. I don't think he's
one of the best defenders in the league, don't you think?
Yeah, but I still don't think he's elite. You know why? Because, I mean, imagine if MJ had a cast around him like Draymond Green has, or even Rodman. Say Rodman, right? Imagine him having a cast around him. Well, he didn't have Durant, Curry, and Thompson.
Yeah, but he had Jordan, Pippen, and Kerr. It's not that bad.
Well,
it's the precursor to what the Warriors are. Isn't that what the comparison is?
I don't know. I don't know about that.
Okay,
but I'm just saying,
right. It's okay.
He goes, Draymond Green goes unmarked most of the time. So therefore, mm-hmm. he's able to finish off plays and do whatever. He's a dirty player. He's not the same caliber as Dennis Rodman. He's not even close to Charles Barkley. And now he's just making a lot of noise about Shaq and the pick and roll. Shaq would have just picked him up and thrown him like about 10 rows deep into the stands.
And that's the great thing, Dasko, because we'll never know. That's the great thing about it. And I share in – I actually like Draymond Green a little bit more than most people. I kind of get him a little bit more, but I understand how he is one of those lightning rod personalities, especially with, as you said, his history to have his hit people in the not-so-great areas. But we're talking about four sports pests that drive us bonkers. And my last one, Dasko, since we're just going so hockey heavy, and it's one that's actually in your corner, Dasko. So Sean Avery, you're familiar, aren't you? You're a Rangers diehard. He was in the NHL from 2001 to 2012. He played for the Rangers in a couple of different stints, and that was really his main team, but also spent time in Dallas and Detroit at the beginning of his career. But he is growing up, my favorite goalies were Patrick Waugh and Marty Brodeur. So when Sean Avery and the Avery rule, when he turned around in the playoff game and turned to Martin Brodeur and decided to wave his hands and stick in front of his face instead of fronting the puck like normal people do in hockey and doing a normal screen, that was just the perfect encapsulation of just Avery. Of course, we don't have this written down explicitly in the rules, but it doesn't mean you have the permission to do it. Like, just finding ways to get into people's heads. But there's so much more to him too. I mean, he's been one of those crazy personalities where he says things that probably aren't really things that should be said, like calling exes sloppy seconds or and having big fines and suspensions for incendiary comments, or fighting with NHL brass like Ken Holland or John Tortorella. Like, those guys are not the ones that go out and fight people just for no reason. Like, these are the big guns when it comes to the fiery personalities in the NHL, and he was right opposed to them at every point when he shared organizations with those guys. So that's why Sean Avery is one of my biggest sports pests.
Is sloppy seconds, is that a Fortnite term?
No, Dasko, that's a dating term, but I'll let you and the Urban Dictionary figure that one out. Maybe you need to watch more Fortnite. We got to figure out. We got to get a lexicon. There has to be a whole new language, don't you think?
Yeah, for sure.
I'm trying to figure out.
I'm not going to spend much more time watching people play video games in Twitter.
Well, yeah, if it's not your thing, you've got to move on.
No, no. Maybe if they're really good, then yeah, why not watch
them? Dasko, if something doesn't feel right to you, I mean, there's a certain amount that you can push yourself to do, but you don't need to. You're not going for a championship. You're not trying to prove something. And that actually is going to be what we're going to get into on the other side of the break in our next segment. We're going to start breaking down episodes 9 and 10 of The Last Dance and the flu game. Michael Jordan, the flu game. That wasn't a flu game. There was still the upset tummy, but all the things that went into that and what precedent that set for athletics and athletes going forward. We'll get into that on the other side of the break right here on The Playmakers on CBS Sports Radio 1140.
You found The Playmakers on CBS Sports Radio 1140.
Hello and welcome back to The Playmakers. My name is Lindsey Brown and I'm joined by Tony Cordasco here. In just a couple minutes here, we're going to get into the flu game and a little bit more about The Last Dance of the final couple episodes that aired last night on ESPN. But if you've missed any part of our show today or previously, or maybe Saturday Sports Beat or a nightcap, perhaps, you can find all of that, listen to it on your smartphone, on your smart device, in your car, whatever, via the radio.com app. If you don't have it already, which you should because you're a pal and you've already done it, but just in case you forgot or deleted it, go to your app store, go to the Google Play store, find the radio.com app, and then search The Playmakers or CBS Sports Radio or Saturday Sports Beat. Whatever you're looking for, we're there, and you can download it, subscribe to it, share it, preach it, live it. It's a whole lifestyle, and we appreciate you and all of your ears. And Dasko, I know that we've been going pretty heavy on The Last Dance content, especially on Mondays, because that's the day after it airs. And, you know, the flu game was one of the big highlights of episode 9 last night. And the flu game was obviously game 5 of the NBA Finals in 1997 when the Bulls were taking on the Jazz. And 97, Dasko, I was 5 years old, so I wasn't exactly plugged into what was going on in the greater, you know, basketball narrative, but I had heard about it. And so for me to kind of get a little bit more of a context, a little bit more of a deep dive on that situation and how transcendental that performance was, not just to his legacy, but to how athletes would kind of look at themselves and pushing through illness, injury. I don't want to say it's all because of Michael Jordan, but this is one of those stories that we hear about all the time. And so, Dasko, do you remember anything about that day specifically of noticing this, or when this was kind of transpiring and going on, or was it an after effect thing where you kind of realized what you had just watched and the level of performance that he had put forth?
Yeah, no, it was, I watched the game. I remember watching the game because I'm a big basketball fan, and mm-hmm. I have been. And I just remember them saying in the pregame that Michael Jordan had the flu and his status, you know, was a game time decision. Of course, you'd have to do anything to keep him off the court. And I just remember that look in his eyes. And
right. He
at times seemed like he was woozy, like he was out on his feet. Like he would just stop.
Right, that he's out of it. We've all had the flu that.
He'd stand in
the
corner.
You know, we're completely out of it.
Yeah. But as it turns out, it was food poisoning. And I still, to this day, though, Lindsay, I don't know that I believe that story. It just didn't seem, it doesn't seem like it's believable.
I think it could be. It depends on, because haven't you had an instance where you order something that maybe from a place, or maybe it's a dish that you've always ordered from that you're really familiar with, that your body is really familiar with, but for some reason it doesn't sit right, or maybe something went a little bit wrong? I don't think it's necessarily what we need to know if it was food poisoning or the flu, but just the fact that this guy was really sick. He was really sick. And to have that ability to push and to do that in that moment, and I don't want to make it out to be that Michael Jordan is really the only one that is able to do this, because I've played through flus before. I've puked in my goalie mask before, Dasko. We've all had those moments where we've been caught in a spot where you don't have time to deal with that type feeling sick, where it's just too big of a moment. But in terms of that one being the watermark, are there any other moments or games or players that come to your mind, Asko, where they faced a similar type of adversity in game day and to have that type of performance? Because I feel like there's a lot of these stories, but this one just sucks up all of the air because it's Michael.
Yeah, no, and, you know, as soon as I saw, like, as soon as I heard five Mama Lukes, deliver.
Asko, did you leave us?
No, I'm here. I can hear you. Are you there? Hello? I can hear you. Hello?
I guess
I'm here.
Hello? Yeah, I guess we lost Lindsay there for a second there. She is actually just not there. And she just left. So, playmakers are with you. Lindsay Brown, Tony Gordasco on CBS Sports Radio 1140. Waiting for Lindsay to return.
Yeah.
How are things going with you, Tony? I mean, you had a good weekend, right?
Absolutely. I just watched wall-to-wall sports. I watched the golf. I watched the NASCAR, UFC, and The Last Dance, and pretty much did not leave the house.
Nice.
But we were just talking about, you know, some players maybe that stepped up due to adverse conditions, right? Something was wrong. They had to face adversity and what have you. And we were talking about the flu game, June 10th, 1997. And one of the occasions that just stands out in my mind was in 1970, Willis Reed, NBA Finals. So he misses game six with a torn muscle in his thigh. And they thought that he would be out for game seven. And out of the tunnel for all the warm-ups and everything at Madison Square Garden, the crowd goes wild. Here comes the captain, Willis Reed, out running on the court. He scored just two field goals that day, but he sparked the Knicks just with his presence. He played in the game as much as he could. But again, game six, a torn muscle in his thigh, and he was just laboring, running up and down the court. So that's one of my memories, Lindsay. You're back, right?
Yeah, I'm here. Sorry about that. My internet just decided to, you know, take a brief nap there. But playing with torn muscles, I don't understand that. It's one thing when you're sick, and regardless, your performance is going to be a tough thing to get through. But when you're playing through torn muscles, or I've seen with hockey, where a guy blocks a shot. It happened during the Boston Bruins playoff run a few years ago, where a guy literally broke his leg and still tried to block shots and kill off the rest of the penalty. I think that's a different level, don't you think, Dasko, when it comes to that kind of constant physical pain?
Oh, man.
What do you deal with better, physical pain or like being sick? Because I feel like there's different ways that people deal with it.
Well, up until the pandemic, I was that guy that went to work even if I were sick. You know, I would just always go to work. That's all that I
knew how to do. Right. You don't want to let people
down.
Do.
Yeah, exactly. So I would always show up for work if I was feeling, you know, real sick, if I had the flu. And then, you know, of course, if I could, then I'd go home, you know, and then sleep it off and rally and come back the next day. But there's been so many, like, superstar athletes that have rallied. Tiger Woods, 2008.
Oh, yeah.
Remember this one?
U.S. Open.
Mm-hmm. The U.S. Open. He's playing with a broken leg. He's
Rocco
got a torn ACL.
Mm-hmm.
It was his left. I'll never forget because he was hitting a shot where he had to lean back like on his right foot and he had no support from his left leg, right?
Yeah.
He was just chipping up. He was just chipping up to the green. And he played through 91 holes, including the playoff against Rocco Mediate. And
which they had to go even
injury,
to more playoff after the 18 holes, which is always custom.
91
for playoff
holes
rounds
with that injury.
On one leg. It's crazy. And it's different challenges for each sport because, you know, golf isn't exactly the same exertion, at least in terms of physicality, as it is for basketball or football or what have you. But it's this ability to constantly be able to put a thought that's coming up in your head saying, you're in pain. This doesn't feel good. You don't want to do
this. It's the adrenaline, right, that's carrying you at that point.
Right, and that ability to say, You need to shut up. We can think this, but we're not going to let this change my mentality or change my true kind of nature in this moment. And that takes a lot out of a person, though, Dasko, too. And I think that's what is important to highlight about Michael Jordan's flu game, or about some of the other examples that we're talking about here, Dasko, because in those moments, when you're in the U.S. Open and you're Tiger Woods and you're going for your legacy, when you're Michael Jordan going for your legacy and going for a championship and millions of dollars on the line, I get it. You want to push through. You want to tell yourself no. But I feel like everybody else also takes that mentality and then superimposes it and applies it to their life. But the thing is, Dasko, not all of us are playing in the NBA Finals. Not all of us are playing in the U.S. Open. And so that mindset to push through, even if you're feeling sick, even if you're not feeling well or you're not feeling your best, some days you have to push through it. But it can't always be no, no. It can't always be you need to push through, because the more you do that, the more you deny yourself to kind of rest, to feel human, to give yourself a break. And Paul and I talked about this a lot in the first hour, of just kind of the mental health angle, especially since I took a day off last week, and how important that is to not always be the person that is the first one in and the last one out of the building, because that's great and it can be really helpful for people. But Dasko, you know, as much as I do, as someone who works in the business, we're always really ready to go for showtime. It's in the other aspects of our life that erode away. And we saw that with Michael Jordan too. Michael Jordan, his life away from basketball, he took that same mentality from his on-court persona and applied it to life. And guess what? It didn't transfer to 6 championships in his life. Like, that doesn't exist. It created a lot of problems in many ways.
You put so much emphasis.
It's dynamic.
Yeah, you put so much emphasis and everything into your career, whatever it might be, that you forget about everything else, or you take care of other people, and then you also get caught up without taking care of yourself. Michael Jordan, again, you know, you and I were talking last week. I was really surprised that there was nothing about his ex-wife, and they were together for over 20 years.
I mean, the kids
and
were in, his sons were in it briefly.
Yeah, well, you know, in the aftermath, but he had to have had footage of his ex-wife in there.
Right.
She was a
but
big
thing
part
is, though,
of his
Dasko,
life for over 20 years.
If you think about it, though, Dasko, where is this documentary airing, though? Like, who is putting on the production for this documentary? ESPN Sports. They're probably saying, why do we want to include the family? And all? I'm sure Michael's probably like, it's fine by me. We don't have to get into my broken marriage. Like, and it's fine. Like, that's everybody. Everybody has family members like that have gone through. It's okay. No judgment whatsoever. But I'm not necessarily surprised that it wasn't included. But I think there's a definite missing piece without that context, without that inclusion. But that's the nature of the beast. It's not like it's a definitive, you know, completely factual account of what happened and what was going on. Then it's a piece of art. It's meat. It's just like anything
else.
It's from a certain, it's entertainment. It's from a lens. It's subjective.
I've got one more example of someone who just stepped up. Okay, Brett Favre. And a lot of people forget about this. In 1990, he's playing for Southern Miss. He beat Alabama some 5 weeks after getting into a car accident and losing 30 inches of his intestines.
What?
Think about how tough Brett Favre was.
See, that's insane.
Five weeks after the car accident.
That's what I mean, Dasko. It's one thing for playing through the flu. You just had surgery.
That's
a lot.
Nothing.
I
the flu's
it's
nothing.
The 90s.
He lost his
it's
intestines.
The 90s.
30 inches.
I get it. These days, I would be – that is the most unhealthy thing. I get it. It was unhealthy then as it is now.
And he's getting hit. It's football. He's getting smashed in the gut.
Today. Yeah,
no,
that would not.
They wouldn't let him
today.
On the field.
No,
no, you're right. Absolutely not.
No way. And that's what I mean, Dasko, because I know that there is some, you know, credence. There is a little bit of a boy or girl scout patch that you get for pushing through it and going through the suffering. I'm like, I am the best person of living the grind. I live in that world. But sometimes you have to go up for air, and if you don't, it's not just about you. You start affecting the people around you, and that's, I think, the big thing that clicked for me is that I was always okay with, as long as it only affected me, if it was a negative consequence on me, I'm like, that's fine. But if it started to affect other people, that's where I drew the line. And I think that's where we're kind of all, what we're all wrestling with right now, too, just as a larger conversation, but something that clearly Michael didn't do as well when it came to the translation. And And just, I think it's such an interesting moment and such an interesting thing that we focus on, much like conversations about who's better, Charles Barkley or Draymond Green or Michael Jordan or LeBron. It's so weird what we're interested in. But nonetheless, an impressive performance, and one that fed into the legacy and brand and just overall. I mean, it's a lifestyle at this point. That is Michael Jordan. And so I'm kind of sad to see the Last Dance go, Dasko, but I said to Paul last hour, I'm kind of ready to focus on somebody else, you know, a different personality, a different story, a different sport even. But I think there will be quite a few sports documentaries or at least series popping out of the woodwork over the next few weeks. But there are real sports coming back. And Dasko, you watched a bunch of them this weekend. I didn't. But I wanted to get us up to speed on the sports that haven't restarted, and specifically where the NHL is. We're going to get into that on the other side of the break, along with our cheers, and send you guys out with some good vibes right here on the Playmakers on CBS Sports Radio 1140.
You found the Playmakers on CBS Sports Radio 1140.
Greetings and salutations on this Monday, May 18th of 2020. Lindsay Brown and Tony Cordasco hanging with you here until 5 p.m. And Dasko, we had some sports restart this weekend, or at least some version of the sports that we saw before everything changed. We saw some soccer, NASCAR, golf, all those were on display. But in terms of the sport that has been the fixation of this town, it's about to get a little more crowded. And trust me, there's plenty of love to go around. Everybody's going to feel very included, very attended to. But this is an NHL city first, Dasko. The Golden Knights were the first professional team here, and obviously, it's a very fervent fan base. And so I wanted to give everybody kind of an update of what the NHL is in their process in terms of resuming the season, because I think they've done less than a stellar job of kind of keeping things straight. Maybe it's too many updates. Maybe it's too few. I'm not really sure. But all I know, Dasko, is that Gary Bettman talked a little bit earlier today at a business conference, Leaders Week, and he spoke in New York today and said that there are probably 8 or 9 different places that the NHL is looking at to accommodate a dozen or so teams in one location as they continue to explore options for resuming the season. Bettman went into, you know, the usual things where we have to make sure that everybody is safe, that the doctors give us the all clear. Those are the people that we are in talks with in terms of putting dates on the line, in terms of making decisions. They're not just they're making scientifically based decisions. But we know that the NHL is dealing with a unique situation, as each professional sports league is, because 17% of the players in the NHL right now are outside of North America. And so that's going to be something that they're going to have to take into consideration. But for the most part, Dasko, it was an update from Gary, but not really. And I wanted to, it's important that we kind of get everybody on the same page in terms of what's going on. But are you starting to get frustrated with the updates just to say, mm-hmm. yeah, we're still thinking about what's going on, or we're still figuring it out? Are you getting the same kind of like frustration that I am, just in terms of not having some movement in some of these bigger sports leagues, at least here based out of the United States?
Absolutely. I say let Bryce Harper come up with a playoff format. Okay.
For the NHL or for Major League Baseball?
No, for the NHL. Because he just his format made the most sense. He just like put it down on paper, talked about it on Twitch, and then people are like, oh, some of that stuff makes sense. But right. Somebody's got to take over and take control. And like you go from like what, 4 hubs to now 8 or 9? It's supposed to be coming down to where you're condensing it, you're refining the plan.
Exactly.
Get set on the team, the number of teams, the playoff format. Is it 24? If you want to house 12, put 12 teams in each site. You don't need 8 or 9 hubs. It's like he's going backwards at times.
Right. And I know that Gary's not the preeminent guy and doing all the legwork in terms of getting this figured out. He is merely the messenger at this point. And I probably shouldn't be saying that because it's Gary. Like, we like to boo Gary. But I just, you're absolutely right, Dasko. It's like they're stuck in the brainstorming stage. And it's not just the NHL, the other leagues as well. And I understand this is a weird situation. Nothing has really been set in stone in any aspect of our society. So why would the sports be, you know, ahead of what's going on? But regardless, I just thought there was going to be a little bit more of a concrete plan, or at least being further in whatever process this is. And I think that the NHL is lagging behind. Major League Baseball, I know it's a different situation, but they've been really ahead of the game. I think that the NBA is dealing with a little bit of an easier pop-up, as I've said over these last couple weeks. But that just puts even more emphasis on the NHL, saying you have a lot more hurdles to deal with, so you have to be extra on top of it. And they haven't been. Or at least
maybe
he just hasn't been allowed to.
There's no action plan. You know, Vegas sounds like a natural with all the hotel rooms that are available here.
Sure.
But the ice conditions in July and August, the hottest time of the year, it still is of utmost concern to me.
Well, and Vegas is named as a hub city for multiple. Trust me, I am concerned, Asko. But the thing is that where you're like, well, Vegas could host the NHL stuff. Absolutely, Vegas could host the NBA. Vegas could host all these things. Okay, that's great. All of these cities have the capability. So why haven't we divvied these up? Because it's not realistic to say that we could host the entire NBA thing and the NHL and Major League Baseball. Not that that's going to happen. But you have to spread this around, and maybe it's just the leagues. They haven't collaborated on it, or it hasn't gotten this far to that point. But I don't know. Maybe I'm just frustrated with the entire situation and just kind projecting it on this specific one. But regardless, I just thought it would be a little bit more concrete. But Gary, I will give him credit, Dasko, because he shares an opinion that I have as well, is that he's very optimistic and hopeful for the sports industry in the long term. And I share that, and I think many other people do. It's just – it's waiting for the vaccine. It's waiting for those big things that we've all been talking about for weeks. And once we're able to kind of settle this, or at least get it to a level that we're used to managing viruses or diseases that we're comfortable with, once that happens, things will probably go back to pretty close to normal. Not completely. It's not like we're going to forget about it. But still, it's just,
is this going to be okay? So fans want the game to come back, right? That's what Bettman said. He said that's important.
Yes.
Are you a fan that wants the game to come back this season, or do you just want it to be scrapped?
Because right now, are you asking me about my personal opinion?
Yeah, because right now, I've almost forgotten about the NHL season. For crying out loud, MLS has a better plan than the NHL.
Yeah, but right. And as I said, they're all dealing with different types of hurdles. But in turn,
you want it back?
I'm speaking with my hockey purist. Well, I want to watch hockey. I want to watch hockey. I really do. But at this point, for me personally, I'm just kind of like, can we just move on? I get it. It's going to be an asterisk either way. So I guess that's really a vote for playing, because it's, why not play? If it doesn't matter either way, why not play? But I don't know. As I said, it just seems like it's rolling. It's nothing's really rolling, and it's stuck in the mud. But to get us unstuck out of the mud, because we do want to send you guys out with some good feelings and some good vibes, we like to end our show with our cheers at 4:50-ish. And that's where we cheers our warm, our cold, our spiked, our settled, our lit, or bitten to something or someone somewhere that's good and bright and deserves to be highlighted and lifted up for all of us to know about. So, Dasko, where is your good news and cheers coming from today?
It's coming from New Hampshire. Postal worker Josh Kroll leaves gift cards for 2020 grads. So he saw signs on their lawns that said 2020 grad. So he wound up leaving $5 Dunkin' Donuts gift cards in some of their mailboxes, which I thought was cool. He also put a nice little note congratulating them on graduating from their mailman, Josh. And he's handed out, he said, to date, around 25 gift cards. So that is really nice.
Yeah. That's awesome. I know.
I was really feeling for the graduates this weekend. I was
heck yes,
for them.
One of my best friends, she just graduated from grad school. My cousins, he just graduated from med school. Obviously, high school graduations, everything. It's such a weird time, and so I want to say congrats to all the grads out there. Or if you have a family that has a grad or something was, you know, displaced or canceled because of this, it's a tough situation. I hope that they're able to celebrate in some special way, and you know. Things like what your guy did here in terms of putting some small gift cards. It's a very small gesture, but one that's very important and needs to be highlighted for our cheers portion here. And the thing that I want to raise up is some news that's coming to us via the Good News Network. That's where I always get my good news. In Cape Town, which is in South Africa, a place that I would like to go cage diving with great whites, they have seen a 75% drop in violent crime during the coronavirus pandemic, Dasko. And the rival gang members in Cape Town are actually teaming up to collect and distribute food and essential goods to those in need. Andy Steele Smith, who is a pastor who works with gang members in the community and through outreach and obviously trying to mitigate and to get those out of here before all this was happening. He said, what we're seeing happening here is literally a miracle. Before the pandemic, South Africa had some of the highest violent crime rates on the continent, but now clearly with new circumstances have created changes and led to this silver lining. The government had imposed some of the toughest quarantine rules in the world, including banning alcohol and cigarette sales. The economy has taken a really tough beating, and the gang members were feeling the effects just as much as anyone else. And so when they reached out to one another, because one of them was saying, hey, I'm literally starving here, they said, well, if we're at the top of the food chain, if we're supposed to be the untouchables and we're struggling, then everybody else is. So they have changed, they have reframed, and now they are helping pass out food, supplies, and other things to members of their community in need in Cape Town. So I don't even know to... First of all, there's the charity aspect of it, and then second of all, it's the reformed nature of it. You have the gang members doing this, and like I said, it's everybody is stepping up, and lots of people are coming to terms with choices and lifestyles that maybe don't fit them or they don't want to fit in anymore. And it's absolutely one of the silver linings for obviously Cape Town, but for just a lot of us that maybe needed a little minute to say, hey, am I on the right path right now? And if not, now's a pretty good time to change it. Chuff Fieldasco, you feel me?
I'm feeling it. I'm also feeling Listen to Your Heart, the season finale tonight.
Oh, my God.
I've got all the feels.
That's what you do to feel better and to get your good vibes, Dasco. I'm glad that's a finale, and I hope that you enjoy that. I will be missing that. I need to finish up the last 20 minutes of The Last Dance and get after some of the shows that I missed last night because I was hiking this weekend and whatnot, Dasco. But don't worry. We will be back to break down all of that and a bag of sports right here tomorrow, 3 to 5 p.m. each and every day. Thanks, Dasco. Thanks, Mark. And we'll see everybody tomorrow.
Thanks.
Bye.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.